Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have a conversation that I've been looking forward to for some time. Dr. Izzeldin Aboulaish is with us, and the book is called I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Rights. And Izzeldin Aboulaish is a physician whose voice was heard around the world when the Israelis invaded 2 years ago, January 16th, the Gaza Strip, and lost three of his daughters. And it was a very moving piece that you will hear during the course of this hour, what he went through. And we are visiting with him today in our sister studios in Washington, Clean Cuts Music and Sound. And Izzeldin Aboulaish, welcome. It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
I was telling my producers, I came home last night and from visiting with the family of one of my oldest friends, a woman I had known for well over 50 years, who passed away in a very peaceful way. Her son sang to her. She fell asleep and she passed away, which was a lovely way for her to pass away. But I came home and then I was thinking about my program today and listening once again to your to the broadcast you had when your home was bombed by the Israelis by a tank and your daughters were killed. And I was listening as a father of three daughters, the tears were just streaming down my face. I can't imagine living through what you lived through. And we'll talk a bit later about the humanity that you bring with it, but I hate to ask you, do you mind just telling our listeners, even though they'll hear it in a short while, what happened, so they know who you are?
I don't want you to imagine or to live what have I lived, or anyone to live it. Because as you said, as a father, with the link with your daughters, and what did you say, how did you feel it? The connection.
Yeah.
You imagined my daughters are yours.
Yes, yes.
And that's what can we do. It's not the biology that to feel connected to only my daughters, my sons, my clothes, or the kinship. No, it's more than that. It's the humanity.
Yes.
That we are connected as a human. And that the people, they lost it. But it's there. It's just a layer of dust. And we need to clean. And to clear this layer of dust, so the people, they start to feel connected. And believe me, with that, the people can be a human, and just a human, and to get the happiness that they lost. Because we are not happy.
Right.
We are running a life. But are we happy? I don't think so. The people are not happy. They may have everything. They think they have everything materialized. But the mental, spiritual, the happiness which is beyond that is not felt there. But it's a close to them. And that's the most important. The happiness is not that I own it. I have it in my hand. The happiness is with connection with others, with sharing, with giving, with engaging with others. That's the happiness. When you have something to eat, you can enjoy it. But I think if you shared it with someone else, how do you feel? You gave something. You will be happy at that moment. Even you will enjoy it. The joy will be multiplied.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you share, as much as you connect, as much as you give, and it doesn't cost much. You know what is the cost? To open your heart. Open your heart. It's in your hand. The key is in your hand. Open it. The heart is big enough to fit for many good deeds and many people. And many can enter there. Just open it. And that's what is needed from each of us. Because you spoke about your friend. The death is death at the end. But the causes are different.
Yes.
The causes are different. And my daughters, they were killed. It was written by God, because I believe to die, but the cause to be that cause, to be killed by a weapon, not of a natural cause. And this is the painful. And this, what do we need to learn? In disease, if someone died from disease, medical doctors, and as a medical doctor, we learn from that how to prevent the next patient from dying of the same cause. What can be done to help other patients? So that's what happened. My daughters were killed. So I don't accept it. And what I'm determined, can I prevent others from being killed? Can we change course? Can we transmit a message of saying, enough killing, enough blood, enough tears, enough suffering? How many people do we want to be killed in this world in order to wake up and to say enough? Can we just turn deaf ears and the blind eyes about what is happening? We can do that. If we started to feel, as you said, to be connected, we will open our eyes, our ears, our hearts. And what can we do to take responsibility of not accepting what is happening in this world, and what can be done to change it?
When our listeners at the top of this broadcast heard your cries for help when you talked to Shlomi Elder, the Israeli broadcaster on Channel 10, who you called and picked up the phone on the second ring, the second time you called, even though he was live on the air, and you walked into that room and found your baby's body is torn apart and your little girl with her eye dangling and finger dangling in the blood and all the things you saw. And anybody who hears that, the problem is not anybody. I hear that and many others hear that. And you just pour down your face thinking about how you would react in a similar situation. How would I respond to that? How would I not want to just be angry and, you know, just go after the world, you know? But you, when you heard that, even the next day when you were in the hospital and your little girl was being put back together, that you spoke, and an angry Israeli woman with three sons in the army said, you know, you probably had weapons in your house and nobody knows what was really there and you deserved what you got. You started this. You know, this sometimes the pain does not cross the threshold.
You are right in that. Those young women who were killed, and what can I say? There was no reason to be killed.
Right.
And they did nothing. They were girls, bright girls, with open hearts, with love, with education, with care about others, connected with others.
Right.
But at that moment, it's good to be with faith. Faith is helpful to everyone. And I was blessed to be a medical doctor. At that moment, I have to decide, as a medical emergency, what can I do? It's not time to think twice, to take the right decision in time. So I started to think just of the future and what can I do to save my daughter, Shada, niece, and the brothers, and to think of my son, to think of his future. What is he going to do? How can he run his life? Is he going to be crazy, to lose control, to be violent, to hate the world? And if he hated, I shouldn't blame him. I shouldn't blame him because he's 12 years old. What did he suffer? Mountains can't bear it. and it can happen. But as a believer, the message of support came from him. When he looked at me while I am screaming and calling my friend Shlomi, "Why are you crying? Why are you screaming? You must be happy. My sisters are happy there. They are with their mom. She asked for them." Sid, believe me, I didn't expect from him at all. These words from a young 12 years old boy to come strong, full of wisdom, full of responsibility, of maturity. Men and leaders don't think that way. And that's what do we want to learn from our children. I said, I have no way. Just to focus on the present and the future. And that this tragedy, I said, it's from God. Planned it. And it will be for good. And I'm sure to be invested for good. Because seconds after I left my daughter's room, the first shell came. So I started to think if I stayed a few seconds, 4 or 5 seconds, I would be gone with my daughters. And no one will learn about what is happening in Gaza Strip. And we will be considered numbers as hundreds who were there. And the war may continue. But it satisfied me that at that time, to be supposed to be interviewed live by Channel 10. And as you said, the first time I called and left my friend Shlomi a voice message. And he said he listened to it. Then he opened the speaker the second call when I called him. And that's when he felt the connection.
Live on the air, I might add.
Yeah, he felt the connection. He felt the responsibility. And it's time that what do we need to think of saving lives, to take responsibility, to have the moral courage of defending justice and the humanity. To feel that I am connected, I am a human being and behaving as a human being and just as a human being. And that's what Shlomi did. He didn't think as an Israeli. He think it's time to think as a human being and I have to defend the justice and other human being. He opened the speaker. It's a risk.
Huge risk.
He said to me later, unconscious, I did it, Izzeldin. He said to himself, it's the last hour for me to work here. I will be fired. But in this world, that's the hope. Sometimes we think in that way. He was opening the speaker, his heart and mind divided. What can I do about his future, his work, and about the interview? A note came to him from the director general of the channel, asking him to keep the speaker open. How it created the courage and the morality that we lost, that it's time to speak loudly and to defend rights. When he defended those girls' rights, he defended his rights. As a human. And that's why the second day it was announced unilateral ceasefire. So it saved others' lives.
It did save others' lives.
And it satisfied me, believe me. You know, it will be painful. It will be stabbing. And I will be angry if it didn't made any difference. And I am determined that this tragedy be invested for humanity, for good cause and just good cause.
I mean, what happened? I honestly, as much as I read about that, every day it was happening when the Israeli soldiers came into Gaza. in response to the shelling that happened and the madness that goes on. But that it didn't connect for me that how deep the connection was between the death of your children, what you suffered that day, and being on Shlomi's TV show led to the end of the killing. There was a direct link.
There is direct relation with that. And that's when it opened the eyes, the leadership, the international community, the Israeli public, the Palestinians, everywhere. The secret now is disclosed. Innocent people are killed. It's the daughters' doctors who are killed. And those daughters who are known to the Israelis as the Palestinians, who wear peace campers, and they are girls, armed with love, with education, with the dreams, with hopes. And this is the doctor who worked for humanity, who worked as a medical doctor, where medicine has one face, has one color. It's a human color. Just to give and to heal and to cure patients. So the second day when it was announced, if it is not 100%, even if it is 5% behind, it made something.
It did.
And I am satisfied. And I said the second day to my daughter, who was severely wounded, I told her, the blood of your sisters wasn't waste. It saved others' lives. You, as Shada, you sacrifice for the sake of others. Do you sacrifice or not? She said, yes. She said, your sisters' souls were sacrificed to save others' lives. It's painful. But at that moment, I would accept it. But I will never accept it, and I will feel the anger, as I said, if it was for nothing.
But to turn that around, it's. I think for our listeners in America and for others around the world to hear it is important on a number of levels. One of those I'll just talk about for a minute, and then the others as well. But is that there's a perception in the West, a perception in Israel, I would say, as well, and in the West in general, that people who are Muslims,
yes,
can't take the death of their children in any way other than revenge. Do you know that? That's the stereotype that we have in this world.
Yes.
And I was thinking about your tearing that stereotype apart with how you respond to the world. I was thinking about the hundreds of thousands of young Egyptians in the street nonviolently saying, we want a life. Or the young Gazans who were saying the same thing in the Gazan youth movement, we want a life of freedom. And it's important also to begin to, because it's changing, maybe changing the mindset of how people think about the Islamic world and people who are Muslims on this planet.
I can say to you, religions were sent to people for what? For one noble cause, to save them from darkness to light, from slavery to freedom. All religions came. If you go backward to see Judaism, how Moses with Pharaoh and others oppressed slaves, and that's what Moses asked, free us. We want to get our freedom. Then Jesus. Then Islam. Prophet Muhammad. So all of them, they share common human values to help humanity and to save humanity. But what did you say about some people in the Western countries, whether minority or majority? This is stereotyping. How can we overcome the stereotyping, not to hang over it? It's ignorance, lack of knowledge. and they must learn. And when they want to judge anything to be evidence, they didn't know Islam. They didn't learn about Islam. Islam is a religion of mercy, of kindness, of tolerance, of good values. In Quran, when God speaks to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he tells him, recall people with wisdom and kind words, and argue with him with good deeds. The same Quran to Prophet Muhammad, if you were harsh and hard-hearted, no one will follow you. It's kindness. Prophet Muhammad never asked for revenge. Prophet Muhammad, when his uncle, who is Muslim, was killed by an unbeliever, and one non-believer woman asked to get the liver of his uncle to torture after his death, and she did it, he said, he didn't get revenge from her. He said, I don't want to see her. She did that to my uncle. And he was in a position to get revenge. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, when he used to cross the road and a woman who used to throw garbage to curse him every time, and he never responded. One day he crossed, he didn't find her. He asked, what happened? She's sick. Can I go to visit her? That's the religion. That's Islam. It's not a religion of revenge. Even some people who think in that way, some people who think Islam recommends revenge, soul with soul, teeth with teeth, eye with eye, but they didn't complete the phrase. If you endure patiently and forgive, God will reward you. And what do we need in life? God's reward. It's not a human reward.
Right.
That's what is needed. In the final day of judgment, everyone, in Islam it's certain, we will be judged by three things that are shared by the three religions, the three values. Your money, from where did you get it? And what did you do with it? Your education, what did you do with it? You kept it in your heart and mind, or you spread it everywhere and taught others? And your time, in fun or blaming others and cursing others, cursing the darkness without lighting a candle. That's what is needed. A freedom that we need it all. How can I be free and you are not? My freedom is linked. Even it's from your freedom. Your freedom of being stereotyped. Of being ignorant. Because if you are ignorant, I will suffer from that. If I am ignorant about you, stereotyped about you, I will react according to my knowledge, and this may induce harm to you. So my freedom from my ignorance, from my arrogance, from my greed, of my ego, it will help all. And that's what is needed. If we don't want to blame Islam and to label Islam with that, or to say a Christian guy, Christianity, because a Christian guy did something wrong, or a Jewish guy, we want to give things their title. He did it, but he didn't do it in the name of Christianity. Christianity or Judaism or Islam doesn't recommend that. Say, Izzeldin did something wrong. George, David, but don't link Izzeldin the Muslim. It's not why in this world we say Izzeldin, the Palestinian, the Arab, the Muslim. Say Izzeldin as Izzeldin. Not to say the American, black American. What is the difference? Speak about the person as a person. We don't want those labels, which creates anger and discrimination. We are one as a human being. When God created us from Adam and Eve and became nations and the tribes, for what? To know each other. And knowing is not to know the name or to see the face, to connect, to know deep, to know what is in your heart, in your mind. Respect, passion, compassion. When you meet someone or to speak, you say, oh, of course, I know him well. There is difference in knowledge of knowing others. And we lost that. And that's which urges each of us, compelling need. We have to start the change. And the change will never come from outside. It's from inside, each of us, to ask himself, what can he do? And what is the supposed change to take? To change what is in his heart and mind, the way of thinking. Those stereotyping barriers he created, get rid of them, please. Get rid. God, in Quran, mentioned, God will never change. What is in people till they change? What is in their hearts, souls, and minds?
We're talking with Dr. Izzeldin Abolesh. His book is I Shall Not Hate. He is the Gazan doctor whose family was murdered by Israeli tanks that blew up the sanctuary of their home. And he now turns that into, for the lives of his daughters, to bring peace and understanding to all of us around the globe, and joins us here in our studios in Washington, D.C. When I was reading your book, I was thinking about how you grew up. Before we get into that too deeply, which I'll do after we take this break, I was thinking about how you described your worldview. And as a child of a man who had to flee his village in what is now Israel, just across the border from Gaza, and they have been in a refugee camp, where you were born in 1955. So where did Izzeldin Abolesh and these feelings of humanity come from, given the world you grew up in, which can in anybody engender anger because of living in a refugee camp? It can engender mistrust. I mean, where did this Dr. Abolesh come from? What grew inside of you to become this person?
This life that I lived, which was a disaster, it's a crisis, it's a tragedy. It's not against me. It's against every human being. Because till now I feel it. I feel it when I see millions of children. Now, in the 21st century, suffering the same suffering I passed through. It reminds me when I go to any of those countries and I see homeless children, street children, street workers from those children who are working, they have to go to school. It reminds me and I feel the anger. I feel the deprivation of childhood. When I see my children enjoying everything they want, because now they have the father who can provide them. But I don't blame my parents. They were fighting to survive and to live and to help us. And they did everything possible they can. They did the maximum. God bless their souls. But what about others? I feel how to be homeless when my house, which is not a house, it's a shelter, just to protect us from winter and sun, when it was demolished by the Israeli bulldozers. I don't want that moment, anyone, to face it. The ones that you love, or even the one that you don't love. It's difficult. That which makes me this injustice, this man-made suffering. Because it's not from God. As you said, your friend, she passed away from a disease. Doctors did their best. My wife passed away from a disease.
Leukemia, right?
Leukemia. It's everything is written and determined by God. But what is bad is man-made. What is happening in this world? It's not a natural disaster. And that's what I looked at it. As it is man-made, this is the hope. You, me, others, we can challenge them. They are not different from us. They are not talented more than us. They have no more hands than us, or eyes, or minds. We can challenge them, even we are in stronger position than them, of not accepting that and doing something. And that's what gave me the strength. What can I do to be focused? I have to change my life. I have to move forward of not accepting what is happening. I don't want to be street child. I want to be someone who can run a normal life and help others. It takes time. It needs hard work.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me, the beauty, the taste of it, the sweetness when you reach there, that you achieved something, the credit for that, it's God's bless, and parents' efforts, support. But the most important, to feel connected with those thousands, even millions, who are left behind, struggling, but they can't. Because we are individuals, there is variations in our abilities. What is your responsibility to give hand to those people, to take them, to speak about them? What can you do to help them and to minimize their suffering? Not to feel as you reached the shore, you are safe. It's not. Don't forget those behind you. From where did you come?
Mm-hmm. Never to forget from where you come.
At all.
Always. We're talking with Dr. Izzaldin Aboulaish. His book is I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Dignity. We'll take a very brief break and come back to talk some more with Dr. Izzaldin Aboulaish. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We have the honor and pleasure here as we broadcast in Washington, D.C. today to talk to Dr. Izzaldin Aboulaish. As you heard at the very top of this broadcast, the tragedy that he suffered. You heard the sound of his voice as he found his daughters who were blown apart in his own home by an Israeli tank. The conversation he had with his friend Shlomi Eldar on Israeli television, and he has dedicated his life to building peace. He's written a book, I Shall Not Hate, A Gaza Doctor's Journey on the Road to Peace and Human Dignity. I think, you know, when people hear your story, obviously many people think that they would have the same strength to do that. I mean, within your own family, when your father had to flee in 1948 and ended up in a refugee camp, you had one brother who joined Fatah and went off and went to Lebanon. And as I read, you've not ever heard from him since 1984.
Yes.
Don't know what happened to him, where he is. But he took a different path. So even in your family, people took different paths. You took a path of, I'm going to work. I mean, you were the oldest son, so you had to work and take care of the family. And but you continued going to school and ended up getting a scholarship to study medicine in Cairo and then here in the United States. So you took very different routes.
Yeah, but at the end, I am fighting to live and to give life to others. My brother, who took that approach, who believed in it, that he was fighting to live also for his freedom. And he, you know, the price that was paid, as he is lost, or we don't know where is he. And I leave it to the memory. I don't want to know where is he. If he is dead, if he is living, to give hope, maybe one day. And that's my mother, who used to keep his shirts, his bands under her pillow.
Mm.
She said, I see him coming. When you speak about the father or the mother, about the children, how do you feel? She's connected. She didn't accept to move to our new house that we built. Said, I see him coming, knocking the door. How can I leave this home? The heart of the mother who never forget. The mother is the one who breastfeed, who sacrificed, who gave for her children. Because in our life, you know, fighting, there are many, the means of fighting are different. And now, these days, the means of fighting completely changed. It's not by weapons.
Hmm.
By minds, technology, understanding, education. That's what is needed. In those days, fighting, you need to fight, real fighting. But I believe now, words and the selected right words are stronger than bullets and can resonate everywhere in this small world. And that's important for our leaders who believe in military and force. We need a new approach, the force of logic, the force of words, of education, of minds, of technology. The weapons, believe me, they are weak. And you can succeed with it, but you can't sit on it. It will never sustain. It can stay. You can succeed for a short-term period of time. And at the end, it is gone. But with the education, no one can take the education from your minds. It's there. It's planted. It's rooted. Even it flourishes there and becomes stronger and more efficient and effective with time. And that's the message to the leaders. You can reach by force to reach the peak. But after that, what are you going to do there? The natural cycle of life, the natural course of life, is to go down. But education, whatever our age, it will remain there. And the wisdom of our old parents, our old professors, it has a different taste.
It was interesting in your book, when you even before the tragedy happened to you and you lost your family, your children, you had been planning on going to Toronto to leave.
Yes.
And the people in the book that you talk about towards the middle end of your book who were both Palestinians and Israelis, some of whom said, you shouldn't go, you should be here, you need to be back here in Gaza, you can't go, you should stay. And others are saying, no, you should go and take care of your family and build a life. So that's a struggle, though, for you. Your heart is in...
Yeah, my
heart in Gaza, but you chose to have to leave.
In my life, I used to travel all over the world, to work everywhere. But after I lost my wife, I decided... I have to take care of my children. I can't leave them. They need their father to be close to them. They need an eye on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see them on a daily basis. I don't want to continue my work, to go Sunday and to come back Friday or Thursday. To whom to leave them? Their children. So that's why I did my best to find a place where I can be with my children. And it's not a problem for me to find a job any place.
You're a doctor.
I can find everywhere. So I got the offer from the University of Toronto. And that's, what can I say to everyone? If I project the future at that time, if I know what will happen, at least I can say I will not travel as much as I used. I will spend more of my time to be with my wife, my children, to enjoy. And that's what can I say to everyone. Enjoy as much as you can of your time with the people you love. Eat with them. Share with them. Have fun. Talk. Play with them. You don't know those moments are coming back or not.
Right. We don't know.
We don't know. So it's important to have that. That's why I moved to Toronto. I wasn't confused.
Mm-hmm.
I know what do I want. I am focused. Even my friends, they used to say, Zeldin, we know even you are focused. I know what do I want. And it's not, where are you? It's who are you? From here in the States, you can help everywhere in the world. The world is a small village. And I don't want to be in a place where I am paralyzed. I can't do anything to help the people. But from any other place, where can you help any people in this world? That's your mission. And that's your role. From Canada, it's not far from Palestine, from Israel, from any part in the world. Yesterday I was in Toronto. Today I am in Washington. Tomorrow I will be back in Toronto. So please connect to your human world.
That's very important. I mean, very powerful what you just said. And I was thinking, your life you've led, you thought that this home you had in Gaza, the small compound you lived in with your... I love the description of how, before the tragedy happened, the Israeli tank blew your lives apart and blew the house apart and killed your daughters, that you described this house with this extended family that lived in this home together with your brother and his children and others, and you just... the moving back and forth and your ducks in your backyard and the life that you had.
This is a beautiful house. Because we used to live in the camp. And then the family expanded. As five brothers married with our children. So I bought that piece of land. Because we are living, as Palestinians, we are living not for yourself. You are living for others. to give, to share. So I bought it, and when we decided to build our house, we started to build as a brothers together, not to ask who is going to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
We are sharing as a brothers, and we build that house. And as I said, the first floor was supposed to be for my mother, who refused. She never visited it. She said, I will never. When I die, just take me beside it. Because she was, her heart, her mind was attached to my brother Noor. So she remained in our house at the camp, not to leave it. And we lived there as brothers, close brothers. They used to take care of my children, my brothers. They were ready to sacrifice anything for the sake of my children. They loved my children more than their children, because they valued highly what did their brother do for them and for their children. So we lived there, happy family, extended family. My house was open for every Palestinian from Gaza to come. The floor, the first floor, the office was there every Saturday to work to help the needy patients.
You had practice there. Practice
there to help them. Anyone who wants medication or an appointment in an Israeli hospital or anything that I can do. In the evening, we used to gather friends, neighbors, relatives as one family to talk about the situation. And everyone who needs something, if I can be of help him, to help. That's the life, that's the house, which was full, I can say, of humanity.
And you knew, I mean, and you, I think people don't realize it until they read your story, know your book, know your life, that you lived in between these worlds. I mean, you worked in Israeli hospitals. You made that monstrous trek between Gaza and the hospitals in Israel where you worked and back again and to do your job. So you became to know a world that was not your own, but you came to respect.
Yes, and that's what is needed, that we don't know each other. So you need to know the other. You need to learn to communicate. Not to know, to listen to someone, to tell you about someone. It's good to tell, but he tells you from his own perspective. And it may be right or it may be false. But when you know by yourself, when you see by yourself, when you learn, I think the situation is completely different. So I learned from that. I spoke the language. I learned their culture. I knew the people, the core of the people. How do they think? And it helped me a lot. I crossed the borders with all of the suffering. But my goal was always not to feel, to provoke me with what are they doing, so I lose control and to feel the anger. I compare it. Am I going to be angry? And then to suffer from that, to lose the time, or to take aggressive action against me to return me back to Gaza, or to be focused on my patient. I have to reach that patient, that woman who is waiting for me. Or what impact can I do there within my work?
We only have a few minutes here. I wanted to make sure two things we did very quickly. One was for you to talk for a moment, and we'll have it connected on our website, daughtersforlife.com.
Daughters for Life. It's a foundation which, after I lost my daughters, I said, what can I do? to keep my daughters alive, and they are living with me.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, as long as I am breathing, they are breathing with me. They are living with me. I see them. They are joining me. Their faces in front of me, because they were able to achieve their plans. And I fully believe in the role of girls and women. It's time for girls and women to practice their role. It's not the woman's status or woman's rights. It's woman's role in shaping, in deciding. The woman who builds a human being.
Yes.
She can't build this world. I think building a human being is more difficult than building the world. So it's time for those women and girls to get the right education, the right skills, to equip them, to give them the means of getting the right role and making the right decisions. That's why this foundation for girls and women in the Middle East, including Israel, some people, they ask, please, Israel is part as Palestine. And I fully believe in the role of education. It's vital. It's the most efficient and effective mean in development. And a healthy, educated girl and woman will raise healthy, educated children, husband, family, community, nation. And at that moment, we will have the peace that we lost and the happiness we are running after. So I can say to the people, have hope, have faith, but take action. Do something. And this world can be changed. And in our life, we have priorities. And our priority is the present and the future. And the future is our children.
Dr. Izzeldin Abolish, it has been just a wonderful pleasure and honor to meet you. And thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you.
And this is, and I love in the end of your book, as we finish this, when you talk about each one of your daughters and their names and what they meant, Bassan, Mayar, and Aya. This is for them. This is for you. It's for all the daughters and the children. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have
you. God bless you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. You can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com.